Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney. Good day, sweet prince.
Again, beginning the pod in the creepiest manner possible. Like, people flagged up the fact you said, you know, you called me babe last week.
Did I?
Yeah.
Well, they're going to hate Sweet Prince.
Ugh.
You must be so excited right now. You're probably going to go, you're going to go skip home after this and pack your bags for Kiev.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you're still a couple days away from leaving, but I mean, it's probably all you're thinking about.
I can't focus on anything else, really. Ukraine is just amazing to me. Mm. A Champions League final. I saw Gab Mercati tweeted from the airport, and I'm like, I'm going to be there.
I was thinking of you because I was reading something about the fan element of this Champions League final.
Yeah. None of it's good.
No, it really isn't. And I was worried about you because it sounds like hotels in the Kiev area, I guess apparently this whole Champions League final thing just snuck up on them. And they suddenly realized, oh my God, we could have made a lot more money than what we actually just made.
Yeah.
And so without warning, fans that had booked rooms in hotels, you know, a long while in advance, suddenly without any, well, they were given reasons, they were totally bogus reasons, much like what happened with Swansea and Southampton. And all these people were kicked out of their hotel rooms, and then these hotels went back and... You want to talk about price gouging. It was, honestly, it was disgusting.
I have to be honest with you. When I looked initially, which was minutes after the first leg had completed, I saw 2,000 a night was one of the cheaper hotels in the city centre I saw. And I thought, that's a mistake. I'll just do the conversion here to the local currency. No, not a mistake. Complete price gouging.
It's
now, the good people of Ukraine, the ordinary working class people of Ukraine, have given up their rooms and their beds in many instances to allow fans to come in because they're so ashamed of what the companies have done. But it's disgraceful. And I think the piece you're referring to is by Rory Times, Rory Smith of the New York Times. And it's terrible. But look, I knew it was going to be that way. The only place I could get after the first leg of the game was a hostel. So I took the hostel.
Have you been checking like every day and just being like, my reservation still exists, right?
I am in constant email contact with the management there.
Because I don't want you sleeping on the street. You won't survive a night.
Well, the way I figure, with a 9:45 p.m. local kickoff time on Saturday, there's no way I'm going to bed. Win, lose, or draw.
That's a good point.
I'm not going to bed the Saturday night. You have to pay for the three nights. And I'm gone at noon on the Sunday.
I'm very excited for you. Do you know what you'll be wearing? Like, for me, when the Eagles were in the Super Bowl, like, the thought, okay, what jersey am I going to wear for this? Like, I know your brain probably works in a similar way.
I've got a few options. I was thinking of wearing the Steve Nichol jersey that adorns this studio.
But it has an autograph on it. You can't wear an autographed jersey.
I know, but it was the one he wore, or it's a replica of something similar to the 84 era jersey.
You don't have like a Gerrard or...
I do. I have a Suarez. I could wear that. That's signed too.
Think about it and get back to
me. No, I'm going to wear... I'll probably wear just a regular 13-14 one and a scarf.
I love it. I think it's a great choice. And we should tell you, of course, that the Champions League final can be seen on ESPN Deportes this Sabado. That's Saturday. That's May 26th. 2:20 p.m. is when the Eastern time is when the coverage begins. It's also streaming live on the ESPN app. You can check it out there as well. Should be great stuff.
Awesome.
I'm really excited for you, and I think it's going to be, you're going to have a great, really great time.
Supposed to be meeting Dan Thomas for a drink.
Is that right?
Yep. Have to go all the way to Kiev to get a pint with that man.
Right.
It's incredible.
They work like an hour and a half away, but let's meet up in Kiev.
Yeah, and this pint has been planned for, since the last World Cup.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. Better be a real memorable drink that you get with them. Let's see. We're going to talk about a lot of things on this podcast. Chelsea have won the FA Cup. Other cup competitions happened, like one in Germany, where there were some interesting talking points out of that. Managerial appointments have been named, including one for Arsenal that has surprised a lot of people. Most specifically, the bookmakers.
Yeah.
Because they had basically given the job to Mikel Arteta.
Yeah, and there's been no official announcement, although Unai Emery has.
I've announced it. I've decided.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about it.
And the U.S., JJ. The roster is out for the Bolivia match. what to watch for, some big MLS happenings. I want to talk to you about the Kamar Lawrence situation, and I want to talk to you about the Portland Timbers because a turnaround has occurred there, and it has caught my eye and my attention,
and we
wanted to catch your attention as well.
Yeah, we flagged it up preseason.
And in addition to all of this, keep your eyes open, everybody, over the next couple days because it is time. We are embarking on our journey to Russia, our World Cup group previews. You should see your first one, Group A, should be out sometime on Wednesday, I'd say midday.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully in time for your commute home, the evening commute, you'll get that. Group B will follow shortly after on Thursday. And then we're going to do a special podcast on Friday, a Champions League final preview with you in Kiev. We're now hitting the busy time. I told Amanda, like, we can't really plan trips and stuff because once the World Cup kicks in and Champions League final this weekend, we thought we just left the busy time, but no, we're just entering the busy time.
Tell her, in the middle of July, the summer really starts. Yep. In terms of doing nothing.
Yeah, seriously. Well, we waited. We booked a trip the week after the World Cup ended.
Sensible.
Going to Cape Cod.
Massachusetts.
Yeah, should be nice. Should be nice. We're going so off topic here, and I know people want us to just get to soccer, but I have a quick life question for you.
Andrew's life questions.
About that trip. So it's my family, Amanda, Jack, and myself, and we're going with my buddy, Dan, and his wife, and they have a child who's roughly Jack's age. It's great. We went away with them last year. It's really fun. But another one of my friends wanted to come too. He's a good friend of ours, so we thought, okay, that's cool. And, you know,
single guy?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So we kind of looked for places, you know, money is an issue for all of us. And, you know, knowing that there was another person who was going to be paying, we thought, okay, maybe we can go for something a little bit nicer because the cost will be spread out over another person. Everything's been booked for a couple months. Today, he just emailed us and said a work commitment of his changed and he can no longer come.
Oh.
What happens now with the payment? Like, we booked this place partially because we knew we had another person.
I think he kind of has to pony up.
You think so?
Yeah, kind of. Also, what is this single man going on a vacation with couples?
Look, you don't question
and
it.
Kids.
It's one of those things
you
that
definitely
I've known him my
it.
Whole life. He's one of my best friends. If he wants to come, cool.
He's spending that money in Cancun, man.
Well, he's not spending it anywhere now. Chelsea have won the FA Cup. Let's get right to it. What did you think of this game? Because a lot of
rubbish.
People... Yeah, okay. I agree. I found it pretty dull. But the only thing that I would say to you and to me is this.
Watch it again, because you're going to see.
No, that's not what I'm going to say. But what was it that we were expecting? Like, anybody who's still surprised by Jose Mourinho and how he wants to play with this specific team, like, wake up. This is it.
And it's not like Chelsea were massively expansive in the game, but they
no,
didn't.
No, this is what Chelsea have been for a couple months now, too.
Chelsea literally just had to create one chance, and they knew that Man United were incapable of chasing a game. Incapable of chasing a final. Oh, it was just turgid. Just terrible. Like, think of the big, big chances United carved out to try and rescue that game from the fire. And there wasn't really many.
There's one big one.
All right.
What are we sitting here? I don't know how things would have played out had it gone to extra time. But if you told Jose Mourinho that somewhere, I forget when it was, like the 78th minute or something, Paul Pogba, who's pretty good with his head, completely unmarked, right in front of goal, to get his header, his free header, that wrong. I mean, that was it to me. That was their big chance to equalize.
I mean, that would have been against the run of Pogba's play in that game. He was dreadful. Just shocking. Unbelievable. It was a waste of time, except that it's the FA Cup final, and you have to watch it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, a complete waste of your afternoon after wasting your morning. No doubt that a lot of you Yankee Doodles did watching the Royal Wedding.
Yeah, I actually did not, and I am an Anglophile, but I didn't watch. And I'm not going to be that guy who's going to make fun of people who watch. I feel like that's such like the stereotypical take, like, oh, who cares? Why are you waiting? I don't know. People are allowed to have interest in whatever they want.
Yeah. The subjugation of the working class is of great interest to many people here, apparently. Such interest that many major networks covered it.
I believe 29 million people watched in the United States.
Yeah, and I hope everyone in England and Great Britain watched it. Everyone, because you paid for it.
Oh, look at you. You went there. I have a few other talking points from the FA Cup. The goal for Chelsea. A lot of people, look, Phil Jones did not cover himself in glory. There's no question about that. And it was probably a little bit uncomfortable.
It's a penalty.
Oh, yeah, it's certainly a penalty, but I'm not even talking about that part yet. I mean, yeah, it was a clear penalty, and I haven't heard anybody suggest anything to the contrary. And it's a little, it probably was a little weird because he just gets named to the England squad. His fellow center half, Chris Smalling, does not, but it was Phil Jones who just looked like a mess in that moment.
Really?
But here's the only thing that I would say on his behalf. I try to point this out, but we always want to blame rather than praise. How about just like, can we just credit Eden Hazard for a brilliant first touch that he completely recognized Phil Jones being out of position and caught that ball in a way that was just perfect, and it really exposed Phil Jones. But a lesser player than Eden Hazard, I don't think would have made that look quite as easy as he did.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And one thing I noticed again in that game was, at moments, the strength of Eden Hazard is incredible. People don't really appreciate that amongst his many skills, and his first touch is another one of those. A good point that Michael Goodman made on Twitter was, I know in the instant it's hard, and you kind of, as a defender, I know myself, you feel like you should try and do something. But if you're tracking back in that instance, the best thing you should do when you've got the best goalkeeper in the world is narrow the angle as best you can and let De Gea do what he can do on that. Rather than, because the minute you dive in, you know it's going to be a penalty.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
It was not the easiest angle, like you said. And like you say, you've got De Gea, who's the best keeper right now out there.
But again, it's in a flash, and you feel as if he's done so well, I guess, to chase him down in many respects to get...
But he didn't chase him down.
No, I know.
If he chased him down, he would have been able to successfully tackle him.
Yeah, it was...
Not blatantly commit a penalty.
Yeah, he didn't get near it.
But Eden has... He's one of those players that I feel like, because he's on Chelsea, I don't like saying this, but I quietly love him. Like, I really enjoy his game. It bothers me sometimes when he'll disappear, but when he's... When he's right, he's one of the players in the league that I probably enjoy watching the most.
Definitely. And I often, in the past, maybe not this year, but in the past, I've often thought I would love to have him on my team.
I think many people have.
That's always a good measure of.
Such a blatantly obvious comment.
Yeah.
Wow. Breaking new ground.
You're going to get double Hazard. Oh, no.
Save it for the World Cup preview.
I know.
Come on, buddy. What are you thinking? Preempting our own material. Speaking of players that at least one side would have liked to have had, Romelu Lukaku did not start in this game for Manchester United, and Jose Mourinho seemed annoyed by it. Afterwards, he said this, quote, "When a player tells you he's not ready to play, when he tells you he's not ready to start the game, then the question is, how many minutes do you think you can play? But how can I convince a player who tells me he's not ready to play?" Sounds like Jose thought Romelu Lukaku was ready to play, but Lukaku told Jose otherwise.
Yeah, and it's management. It happens. Things like that crop up all the time. Again, I don't know why he's putting this into the public domain.
Mourinho?
Yeah.
Everything. Well, after a loss, he'll put anything in the public domain.
I know, which is not good.
And it's why he has a relatively short shelf life everywhere he goes, because he's going to rub guys the wrong way. Lukaku probably didn't love seeing those comments afterwards. Maybe if he's really hurt, he probably feels like his manager just threw him under the bus when he tried to give them all that he had just by playing at all.
Well, he's creating doubt. And that's the worst thing for a footballer, where the fans might look at him and think, was he up for it? Did he wuss out?
Right.
It's terrible for a professional. I know he does it. I know we have all the theories, and we've trotted them out in this show about how he has to strive and work in an environment of conflict. But I don't get any of this.
Well, he wasn't done there. He moved on from Lukaku to Chelsea in general when he said this. Afterwards, quote, "I'm quite curious to know what you say or what people write, because if my team plays like Chelsea did, I can imagine what people would say. I congratulate them, but I don't think they deserve to win. I am Manchester United manager, and I have to be respectful, not just because they are my previous club, but because they are the opponents today, and I think we deserve to win."
I mean, if it's a battle of the stats in terms of possession, fine, yeah, but that you couldn't carve out, or you could only... Look at that second half. I just tell everyone I'm actually getting annoyed now that we're talking about this, because it's such obfuscation on his part. Look at that second half. That's the best you can do with the tools available to you. And one of our listeners, who is a Man United fan, wanted to talk about how United need more talent. You've got a player like Alexis Sanchez, Paul Pogba in the team, Mata to come into the side as well in that final. And that's the best you can do as an onslaught to make, you know, what still one of the major competitions, whatever way you want to dress it up. It's not what it used to be, but it's still the FA Cup. That's the best you can do when you're losing. That second half. There was a moment in the second half, Andrew, where United were breaking and the whole left-hand side of the field opened up and Pogba's in possession. And he had space to drive into, and he had a pass that he could make. And he plays this terrible ball, which is intercepted by the Chelsea fullback. They are just completely neutered by this manager. It's awful to watch.
My issue with that comment is a little bit of what you're saying, where instead of ripping the other team, how about laying a little bit of blame at your own team's doorstep? But more than that, JJ, don't you think him talking this way is a little bit of pot and kettle? Like,
it absolutely is.
Isn't this how Mourinho sets out to win most weeks?
Again, Twitter is not always the best, you know, measure of fans, but you should have seen the amount of United fans who were lolling.
Of course. I mean,
at that, they were like, that's how we played all season.
Exactly. They don't set out to play this positive, free-flowing style. They do the same exact thing that Chelsea did when they get their lead.
And he also started moaning about the fact that he didn't have Fellaini.
Oh, he has this love of him.
What kind of game were you going to play if Fellaini was there? Good Lord.
Lump it
up to Fellaini, get knock-ons, hope maybe he'll get ahead or something like that. And God bless him, Fellaini's good at it.
But to look at him as the missing link as to why a club that has the likes of Pogba and Alexis Sanchez and you know, Lukaku coming in off the bench in the second half of this game, you know, I mean, to say that Fellaini is what we were missing. Come on, man. Oh, it just so falls on deaf ears. Now, all of this leads into a really interesting article that I thought Mark Ogden wrote after the game. And the gist of it is essentially that everyone out there is just working under the assumption that Antonio Conte is going to be fired by Chelsea. It may not be worded that way, but Chelsea are going to run him out. And meanwhile, there's no whisper of anything in terms of Jose Mourinho's job security at Manchester United. And Mark Ogden poses the question as, why is that? He almost suggests that it should be the opposite. If you look at Conte's time with Chelsea, they've won the league and they've now won an FA Cup. Jose has won, I will give him the Europa League, but by and large, he hasn't.
If they hadn't won the Europa League last season, I'm sorry,
the League Cup wouldn't have cut it. And you haven't really seen a huge improvement over the course of this season. Year to year you have with Jose and Manchester United in the league. You know, they finished second this year, which was a drastic improvement off of last season. But over the course of this season, it seems like they've almost certainly plateaued, maybe even regressed, you would say, in the way they played at the start of the season compared to how they were playing at the end of the season. They're coming away with no trophies this year. I don't know. This, like I said a couple weeks ago, this was not a season that I think Manchester United fans will look back on fondly, but nobody is really concerned with Jose's job.
No, and I think history informs us on the Chelsea job, because we've seen good managers come in, do good jobs, and then get fired. I mean, he only has to look to his Italian counterpart, Carlo Ancelotti, to understand the way it works at Chelsea. And that's why we're almost conditioned to think, oh, he's had a row with the board, they've won the cup this season but have been way off in the league, so he's on his way out. Whereas we don't quite see United, we're still in almost the Fergie zone, where it's just managers are given time, which is clearly not the case when you consider what happened to David Moyes or even what happened to LVG. But what was interesting to me was, and Jan Agafjortoft, who is somehow gaining this reputation as an interviewer, a post-match interviewer, that's really well-deserved, but it's kind of off the cuff the way he asks his questions. It's not slick. It's not that well-produced. He works for Visisport in Norway. Now, we saw his post-match after the Dortmund bombing, the replayed game where he spoke to Nuri Sahin, and that was one of the great interviews of last season. He did something on the sideline after Liverpool and Rome, and he did it again at the weekend. He interviewed Jose Mourinho, and the first question he asked him wasn't about the cup final. He asked them, as you stand here after losing this FA Cup final, where is the progress of this club? Where are you guys at? And Mourinho goes, no, 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 this isn't a question for right now. It's not a question for right now. It's the question he doesn't want to answer, Andrew, because he can't. I don't know where this is going. I'm not sure that he does.
I think you're right. But ultimately, I think that what we're seeing is, I think we're kind of seeing the thing happen that we all know deep down inside, but no one wants to say, because we all like to tell ourselves that the game ultimately is about trophies. But Manchester United qualified comfortably for the Champions League. Chelsea will not be playing Champions League football next season. And Abramovich, I think, is somebody that really values that competition. So despite the fact that Chelsea is walking away with a trophy and Manchester United are not, I mean, do we really still live in a world where we are going to look at Chelsea's season and say that it was more successful than Manchester United's? No. And I think Chelsea realized that. And they, and like you say, they have such a short hook with their managers. The players all sense it. Look what Willian did after the match.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay. But I mean, but that is a sign that these players all know the way management works at this club. So they'll, I mean, they know that Conte's gone, and the once that respect factor leaves, forget it. He's not getting it back. And look, here's the other thing I'll say about Chelsea. And I joked about this a little bit with you with Liverpool's run to the Champions League final. But, you know, the board can look at the FA Cup title and say, that's great, we got this trophy. You know, fans should be thrilled about it. I'm not telling people not to celebrate it. But here was Chelsea's road to their FA Cup. Norwich, which they had to then replay, which they then won the replay on penalties. Then they beat Newcastle, Hull, Leicester, Southampton, and then they got by United. I mean, it's not exactly littered with the most difficult set of opponents.
Right, but it's irrelevant. I mean, it's irrelevant. The cup,
but the board may look at that and
they
say, like...
They will not be looking at that. They'll be looking at Champions League qualification.
Right, but I'm
the
saying
The FA Cup
even,
is nothing. They won't even... This will not get a cursory glance. In fact, the board members in 2 years' time will struggle to remember that they won the FA Cup this season. That's the way the cup is right now, and we should not be under any illusion. It's a good day out for the fans, nothing more.
Wow. I think you're right. Whether that's sad for people to hear or not...
it's just the way the game has gone with the largesse of the Premier League and European competition.
Yep.
Simple as that.
We move on from the FA Cup to the German Cup, the DFB Pokal, where Bayern Munich fail to win the double. Eintracht Frankfurt do win 3-1. They spoil Bayern's party. A lot of the talk after this one was the use of VAR, a topic that we have grown somewhat tired of discussing.
Yep.
Because you and I are both sort of set in the way we feel about it. This one was interesting. It came up late in this game in a couple huge instances. One directly prior to Frankfurt's second goal, where there was a handball in the build-up, which VAR looked at. And what I liked about the usage in that instance was we always talk about handballs and just how no one really, if it's not blatantly obvious, they're not going to call it. I've grown tired in the NFL of seeing the referee go over to the board, look at something that we have seen the replay of 50 times. Nothing new is happening, but they're still looking at it, and the game is just brought to a complete halt. The referee in this match did not do that. He went over, looked at the replay, saw it once, and then made his decision and walked away. He kept the flow of the game intact as much as he could with this system. I thought he got the handball one right. He looked at it. There was contact with the hand. It was probably not intentional. I think he had to let that one go. But then after that, Kevin Prince-Boateng, he committed a foul in the box in like the 95th minute of this match. It should have been a penalty. Went over to VAR, looked at it, did the same thing. Tried to keep the flow going, looked at it once and said no, corner kick instead. Off of that corner kick, Bayern had the keeper up. It amounted to nothing. The keeper was out of position, obviously, and Frankfurt went in, scored the third goal with no one in net. It was an exciting moment, but what I found fascinating was afterwards, when Kevin Prince-Boateng was asked about it, his honesty, JJ, was shocking. Here's what he said, quote, "I obviously hit him. You can see it. After that, the ref has to decide. I honestly thought he'd award a penalty. Today we were lucky that he didn't award one. I thought he has to blow his whistle." That's from the guy who committed the foul in this case.
It's refreshing, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Not if you're the official. The ref probably said, hey, I did you this huge favor and you're still throwing me under the bus and making me look like a buffoon here? I don't know how you can have VAR. You can look at something like that, that even the player involved is so willing to admit how obvious the penalty was. You can look at the replay and not call it. I mean, Prince Boateng clearly kicked the back of Javi Martinez's Achilles, and no call. And it essentially decided the game. So, look, Bayern fans are going to be furious about that, just about the fact that they lost. They're going to be conflicted about how this season went because they went out earlier in the Champions League than they would have liked. They lost this game, but they didn't play poorly necessarily. I know they conceded goals that typically they don't concede. They still had loads of chances. But in the end, I don't know. I feel like this was kind of a weird season for Bayern Munich. And despite the fact that they won their league with such ease, I feel like their fans are probably walking away with a little bit of an empty feeling.
Well, we know they should have gone through in the European Cup. They were the better team over the two legs in that, in the Champions League. But look, I think it's good for German football to see another, something different. I know Eintracht Frankfurt have a grand history. And they're probably one of the bigger clubs in terms of what they've won and done in the past. But it's nice to see a different name do something. I don't know. I don't care that Munich didn't win it.
Well, there you go.
I'm not bothered about the conflict or the sense of ennui that the Bayern Munich fans are, you know, dealing with.
A few other prominent stories from over the weekend. They all involve farewells to legends. Andres Iniesta playing his final match for Barcelona.
And hung around at an empty Nou Camp for like hours,
apparently. It was like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And there's a picture of him in a totally empty stadium with the lights kind of dimmed.
Barefooted.
It's a beautiful picture.
Yeah.
Just sitting kind of in the middle of the field, just like one last...
Breathing it all in.
Yeah.
Smelling the grass probably. Just, I think it's lovely.
If you get the chance, Barcelona released a really cool video where the whole team went into a room at their training ground that has kind of like a... It's like a mini movie theater, basically. Mm. And they went in there. And Iniesta was the last to arrive, and he walked in, and the team all, you know, they saved a seat for him right in the middle, and they kind of gave him a standing ovation. Then he sits down, and then on the movie screen in front of them appears essentially a "This is your life, Andres," and it starts with him at La Masia, with interviews with him when he's like 9 years old. It's crazy. The footage is amazing, talking about the player that he wants to aspire to be, and throughout this whole video that Barca released, not only are they showing clips from the movie, but they also have a camera that's pretty much fixated on Iniesta and his reaction watching his life as a Barcelona player in front of him as it's all coming to an end. It's really emotional. His eyes are watery the entire time. Other players in the room, you know, they're showing Messi sitting right next to him because those two, and Xavi, who's not there, but those three are really kind of the faces of this era.
They tripped off the tongue.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of players you can see getting glassy-eyed in it. If you get the chance, I saw it tweeted out from Barcelona's account. I'm sure it's on their website, too. I would highly recommend it. I know I'm not saying anything crazy here. Just watching this highlight video of him, you forget just how amazing he... I don't want to say you forget how amazing he was, but in a way, like, we always associate Messi with the highlight reel moments and Ronaldinho with highlight reel moments.
Yeah.
Watch this video. Iniesta has a fair share of them as well. He's not just a guy who makes the right pass,
right,
or the smart play. Like, he was also just as gifted a player as really any of these guys were.
But in his demeanor, in his physicality, even in the way he looked, he was able to kind of not blend into the background because his skill was there for everyone to see, but he was able to kind of just be a facilitator as well, which is amazing to think. I honestly think he should do another season and then call it quits.
He is going to do another season, just not with them.
Yeah, that's what I mean. With them, don't go.
He's still good enough. He's going to start for Spain.
It's going to be crucial for Spain in the World Cup.
Why is he doing this? I don't get it.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I guess there are maybe familial concerns down the line that he wants the one final mega pay packet. Maybe experience a new culture.
That could be. But he looked, I mean, I can't tell what a guy is thinking just off his appearance, but he looks
bereft.
Really sad,
yeah,
that this has come to an end. This has been his entire life as a professional, going back to when he was a child. A couple other ones, staying in La Liga, Fernando Torres playing his final match for Atletico Madrid, club where he made his name and then came back to them.
Yeah, and I was glad he scored and had a run, a decent run in that game, because I thought the minutes he got in the Europa League final were paltry. I honestly think that game was wrapped up and that Simeone could have given him a little bit longer, and maybe there was a goal in it for him on a grand stage, because it felt like he was on for like a minute and a half, which is not great. So this was befitting his status in the club.
His farewell has led to a couple interesting questions. One, where will he go next? Because MLS has come up, but we still don't know. And two, the rumor mill is circulating. And have you seen the latest rumor for Atletico Madrid? And I guess what you would have to consider to be his replacement.
I have not.
Jamie Vardy.
Vardy to Atletico?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I find that very intriguing.
I think it's intriguing too.
I think really highly of him.
I do too.
I believe that he could go just whatever his skill set is. I feel like it translates. And I would like, I'd kind of like to see him at, for, I know he's won a title at Leicester, but I'd kind of like to see him at an elite club and see what he could really achieve.
Yeah, I'd kind of like to see him at a club that still has Antoine Griezmann to be creative for him as well, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but if Griezmann leaves, it opens, I mean, it.
Yeah, but he's not that. He's a different kind of player.
You don't think him and Diego Costa could play off of one another with, you know, Saul behind them?
I mean, maybe.
Koke, I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
I think it's a pretty damn good side with him. Even if Griezmann leaves, I think that they could be okay.
I honestly don't know. I'd need to think about it a little bit more. But I mean, I do like him. And I would encourage him to do it. It would be against, it would buck the trend of English players of his age to do something like that.
Speaking of Leicester, going off topic for a sec. A couple people have asked me this question, and I want to ask you, because I know you follow American sports here as well. Vegas, the Vegas Knights going to the Stanley Cup as an expansion team. Multiple people have asked me what's more of an improbable story, that happening, and let's say they go on to win it, or Leicester having won their title. And I answered without any hesitation.
Still Leicester.
Agreed.
Yep.
Like, the NHL, a playoff system, a salary cap sport.
Yeah.
It's all designed for parity to exist. The Premier League, like, say all these great things about it, but one thing that it is not designed to breed is parity. I mean, you look at the clubs that succeed, they're not coincidentally the ones that spend the most money. Leicester have never been that and will never be that. And
I mean, Leicester survived the relegation trap, which there is none. I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights come in and they just exist.
Right. And look,
there you are in the league.
And if you get into the postseason, like, things can happen in an elimination tournament
style.
Of course,
absolutely.
But for Leicester to do that over the course of an entire season, 38 games, I don't know.
They had to stay ahead of the pack for an entire season.
And look, I'm not saying that what Vegas are doing isn't also incredible, but if we're setting the bar at Leicester, having won that title, what was it, JJ? 3,000 to 1? Were the odds
5,000 to 1 or something?
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. For me, that
Leicester had to stay in the hunt, like with these elite teams, right the way to the end, and make sure they were in pole position by the last game, which is just not the way playoff sports work. So it's not comparable.
No, I would agree. And one other farewell, of course, Gigi Buffon, who will be leaving Juventus. However, like Torres, like Iniesta,
crazy rumors.
His career is also not over.
No, initial rumor. And the BN sports journalist, an Italian football expert, I guess you call him, Tancredi Palmieri, had put it out that he had spoken to Liverpool. Spoken to them. Straight after, almost a day after his farewell game, he'd spoken to Liverpool. And then the strong rumour since has been PSG. I don't know.
Well, how much are you willing to spend on a keeper who is of that age?
40. 41 next season. I don't know. I would have done cartwheels 10 years ago.
I don't know if he would have been available. It is amazing, though, that the record for what a keeper costs was him until Ederson. And it was him from like 2001. It was like 17 years
I remember
that existed.
When he went from Parma to Juve, it was a sensation.
Yeah. So three guys who will be changing jerseys next season, and I'll be very intrigued. Where they wind up. You know what else intrigues me? Hymns. Hymns intrigues me. You know why? We're talking about Andres Iniesta.
Uh-huh.
I could see him enjoying the fruits of what hymns provides.
You know what I heard? One of his big problems.
What's that?
He used to use those gas station
supplements.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? 66% of men lose their hair by age 35, and he would be one of those people that would qualify as that. He's 33. Did he turn 34 just recently? But the thing is, when you start to notice that you're losing your hair like he probably did one day, it was already too late. If he could go back and change one thing about his career, maybe it would be this.
Maybe that's what he was thinking about at 2 a.m. in the new camp. He wasn't thinking about football at all. He was like, look at this lush grass beneath my feet. Wish that was on my head.
So I ask you and I ask him, do you want a bald spot to pop up or do you want to do something about it first? Do you want your hairline to recede or do you want to do something about it first? Why do guys turn to weird solutions like you mentioned, the gas station supplements, when they can turn to medicine and science? So here is the solution, 4hims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and other wellness supplements for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. There's no waiting rooms, no awkward doctor visits. You save hours by just going to 4hims.com, answer a few quick questions. Doctor reviews all this, he prescribes you, and bang, products are shipped directly to your door. And this is a tremendous product. And if you're somebody that knows you have hair loss in your family, in the genes, in the gene pool, I would go to the website immediately, 4hims.com. Order now. Listeners to this podcast get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy. But no, we're telling you to go to 4hims, F-O-R-hims, H-I-M-S.com/offside. That's F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com/offside. 4hims.com/offside.
And please, guys, stay out of the gas station.
Yeah, there's nothing for you there.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever bought in a gas station on a trip?
Is that like a normal question? I've never bought anything weird at a gas station. Maybe like a Slim Jim. I don't know.
I've done the gas station hot dog. You know, the one that's rotating there.
Yeah, Seinfeld did a whole bit about that.
I've done it. Wasn't bad.
Yeah, hot dogs typically, I think, are hard to screw up. Hot dogs are great. Let's see. We continue now. We go from Europe and we come back. Come back westward to the United States of America.
Westworld.
The roster has been released for the Bolivia match. That is a thing that is happening. Again, like what we said in previous U.S. friendlies since the disaster happened, they're doing exactly what they should be doing. It's an incredibly young squad. It's a lot of names of promise. It's a lot of names that you may not be familiar with yet. It's what should be happening.
Players that aren't even established with their clubs, never mind the U.S. men's national team, but it's a good idea.
It's an average age of 22 years old for this squad, which, again, this is exactly right, because 4 years from now there will be another World Cup, and an average age of 22 will then be 26. That is the sweet spot. That's the prime, and that's what we were missing from this most recent iteration of the U.S. men's national team. Looking at the roster, what are you most intrigued by? What names are you kind of excited about in particular?
I'll go back to front. Matthew Olasunde from Manchester United. I know nothing about him. I'm very interested to see what kind of a player he is. Strangely, Julian Green for me pops up because this guy seems to be something of a nomad. He's on loan again from Stuttgart. I'm wondering where he's at in his trajectory. And I think we'll get a better idea of that against Bolivia rather than that game against Cuba last year where we didn't learn very much. Keaton Parks from Benfica, I know so little about. I'd be fascinated to see him play. And probably most of all, Josh Sargent at Werder Bremen, see his progression in a year from the under-17 World Cup.
Yeah, the ones for me, I think it's central defense. Cameron Carter-Vickers, who we talked about recently, we had a mailbag question about him. He just signed a new contract with Spurs.
As you predicted.
He's been on loan, first with Sheffield United and most recently with Ipswich. So I'm curious about his progress in particular. But then also Matt Miazga, who by all accounts is coming off a really successful loan spell with Vitesse Arnhem.
Yeah.
In the Eredivisie. So, yeah. We just kind of assumed that, you know, John Brooks, this would be his job to lose. But Carter Vickers and Matt Miazga are guys that I think a lot of American fans are kind of rooting for their progress.
I don't think we've consistently said Miazga. We wanted to see more of a Miazga run. We even said that at the Gold Cup last season. We wanted to see more from him. What was there to lose was our argument. But that was a different time, Andrew.
It certainly was. Also, Eric Palmer Brown, sticking with that same position, who I really liked at Sporting Kansas City, who then went to Man City and has since been loaned out. So the defense. I want the defense
shored
up.
You're boring, aren't you?
Well, I want that shored up because it turned out, I thought we were good there. And it turned out to be such a problem, specifically against Costa Rica, where it just seems like they could tear us to shreds.
Both Costa Rica games had me and you kind of brought back down to earth, shall we say.
Yeah, and you know, so the page is potentially turning on Jeff Cameron, guys who were mainstays at some of those positions. So that's kind of what I'm most intrigued by right now, is that position in particular. So we'll see. We'll see how they do against the Bolivians. Do you have a mailbag?
Mailbeasy.
Ah.
At CEO Soccer Pod, cutoffsidepod@gmail.com. Thank you again. Really struggling to get to all the mail we get, but I try my best. Mark Thompson. When I saw this from William, I already could imagine Andrew Gundling using his favourite phrase by calling him a petulant child. I'm bummed that my favourite player of the last few seasons has done something like this. And he posts the picture from Instagram where Antonio Conte is, I mean, effectively cropped out by three cups that have been placed over him. Rather deliberately by William, who isn't entirely happy with his playing time.
Which I do kind of understand.
Because he's been brilliant whenever he has played.
Right. But why? Just why? You just won the FA Cup. Just be happy.
Celebrate with the fans who love you.
Or the teammates that you're close with. If you don't like your manager, fine. If you know he's going to be gone in a couple weeks, fine. But just, it only makes you look small.
Yeah,
and it
and
only
petty.
Makes you look bad.
And childish.
So, and look, maybe he has been treated unfairly by Conte. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but just someone needs to tell him, don't post that. You're going to look foolish.
Do you think in a few years' time we'll be watching Champions League magazine and we'll hear this voiceover? Ah, I remember it well. It was only a joke. In fact, me and Antonio laughed about it afterwards. Ha ha ha, we said.
I love that guy.
Yeah.
Great voice.
He's brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm going to constantly use it. It's one of my better voices.
Yeah.
When LFC hoist the trophy in Kiev, will Coutinho be there with his former teammates? Does he get a ring? What's the protocol? Love your show. Keep them coming. Wayne, that's actually a pretty good question. Question. I completely dismissed it at first, and then I looked for an article on it, and I found one from the Liverpool Echo. UEFA regulations dictate that a winning team receives 40 gold medals to hand out as they see fit. Coutinho is one of 25 players who have featured for Liverpool in Champions League action this season. Nathaniel Clyne and Adam Lallana have each featured only once, but that is sufficient to be presented with a medal. UEFA declare that recipients have to have played some action to be eligible. So Coutinho is eligible, and it's entirely up to the club whether they want to give him a ring, or rather a medal or not.
Now, can I ask a follow-up question to that?
Go ahead.
You're Coutinho. Do you even want one? He doesn't feel like he's part
count.
Of this.
It doesn't count.
His Champions League campaign, well, it wasn't with Barcelona, actually. He was cup-tied. He couldn't help them.
No.
He's a Barcelona. He's going to be happy for his former teammates, I'm sure.
Yeah, but he won't want one.
I wouldn't think
if
so.
If he wants one, I'd worry about him.
If they have a limited number to hand out to whoever they want at their own discretion,
you can't be giving him
do
one.
The right thing. Right. And
give it to the kit man.
He should say to them, no, I appreciate it, guys, but I didn't earn that.
They're not going to. I wouldn't imagine it's going to come up.
That's interesting. But, I want to keep an eye on that.
But
now.
The protocol is interesting,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah. What to watch? Oh, wow.
What are you doing? Are you trying to run me out of time?
I'm just trying to subtly warn you.
No, it's your contempt for the common man who wants to write in.
I love the common man, but I'm subtly warning you.
Speaking of common men, Chris Foley. Hey guys, I'm coming up on my 1 year anniversary of listening to you. I haven't missed a pod since. I absolutely love this podcast. It's the only one I listen to nowadays. I recommend it to you to us. I recommend it to just about anyone I come into contact with.
That's awesome.
Could you imagine he's walking down the street and there's like a rabbi? Hey, rabbi!
Rabbis can listen to this podcast.
I know,
we're very popular in the Jewish community.
All right. If you remember me, you'll know I'm the guy who was written in about only having started watching soccer in the last year after discovering your podcast. And the guy who started the whole merchandise conversation, please give me something to buy. This Saturday, With the Champions League final, I've decided to support one of the two best men in podcasting. JJ, this is ridiculous. This is the only podcast you listen to. Of course I'm one of the top two, but thank you. By rooting for Liverpool in what will be the first time I'll ever sit down and watch a full game of soccer. I'm 20, by the way. Wow.
I have to question how much he loves the sport. If that's
this
the first game
cool,
he's ever
going
to watch in its entirety.
He's into us rather than he's into soccer. Anyway, quick side mailbag. This is funny. I was walking around my parents' house listening to the pod on our Alexa. And since she was only half listening, my mom said that she was proud of me for finding religion by listening to your podcast. She thought hymns was actually hymns.
H-Y-M-N-S?
Yes, as in religious hymns. And prematurely congratulated me before hearing about the frustration of gas station supplements.
Yeah. Next week we'll be doing reads for Psalms.
Much love and thanks for the amazing content as always. By the way, those gas station supplements. Josh, hope all is well. I've been listening to the pod for over a year now and I've thoroughly enjoyed listening to you guys banter back and forth while discussing and debating the sport we all enjoy. I've tried listening to other podcasts, to other sports I follow, but haven't found any that compare to yours.
Oh, yeah.
Well done. Get in. I'm hitting the sweet spot now. But on to the question at hand. About a year and a half ago, I decided to jump into the world of soccer and follow an EPL team. After some research and watching some games, I settled on Spurs. Recently, I took a dive into my family history and realized that I am more English and Irish than I had previously thought. I also found out that my extended family hails from Liverpool.
Oh, come on. You made a choice.
With this recent information...
Show some backbone and stick with it.
I'm wondering if I need to change my EPL allegiances to either Liverpool or, dare I say, Everton. I'm curious as to your guys' thoughts on this. Keep up the great work. I say stick.
Stick with it.
Stick with it, man. I mean...
Look, I'm biased, but it's not like you made a bad choice.
Yeah, somebody in our family told us we're part French going way back. I'm not going to start supporting Le Havre, you know? Stick with it, man. Alec Benson. This is the final one, I promise. With LAFC joining the MLS and Nashville and Miami on the way... When do you think it's time for the MLS to stop and say, okay, we have too many teams, and at that point, do they start to seriously consider promotion relegation? Lol.
I think they want to get to 30.
If they do decide on this system, in your opinion, which league should be the second division? Love the pod. Keep up the great work. I could even listen to a two-hour pod from you guys weekly. Here's the thing. They have no intentions of doing promotion relegation. I think that's clear. And by the way, I think they should say stop now. And if they're serious about promotional relegation, which I doubt, they should bring it in now and say the like of FC Cincinnati should be promoted from the USL. It shouldn't be we're handing out franchises left, right, and center now till we get to like 30. That to me is just an alien concept and I don't like it.
By the way, you see who's taken over at this future Nashville club?
I did see that. Ian Ayre.
Yeah.
Formerly of Liverpool.
And of being Liverpool.
Yeah. What? Mode of transport did he favour on being Liverpool? Do you recall?
I don't remember.
He made sure that he was shot on his Harley Davidson.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Yes.
So I want him shot now on horseback in Nashville. It has to happen. I want being...
How about we change that to you want him filmed?
Filmed, yeah.
Not... Sounds like you're wanting some sort of execution to occur.
Yeah, I wasn't his biggest fan, but I wish him no specific harm. No, I mean I want him filmed on horseback for being Nashville.
Love it. I think it's a great idea. At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter and caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Well, I've been thinking recently and talking with someone who knows more about social media than I do.
anyone.
Twitter has like plateaued. Is it time that we either say goodbye to social media? Or is it time to like make the leap to Instagram fully? What do people want?
I don't know, but all I know is that our followership on social media reflects in no way how many, thankfully, how many people listen to us per pod. Like, I'm urging people to follow us on Twitter, and then I look at what's on Twitter, I'm like, I'm sorry, don't bother. No,
but
I take that back.
People certainly interact with us so on
it's
Twitter, so it's
the easiest way to get to us, because I'm plugged in all the time.
Yeah. Let's see, what to watch for MLS Friday, 8 o'clock p.m., Toronto FC, and FC Dallas. Don't really have much on that. I'm going to move on here to Saturday at 7 o'clock p.m., New York Red Bulls and the Philadelphia Union.
Yeah.
Most of what I have here is on the Red Bulls, because they're coming off a really weird game.
Great win. Great road win.
I mean, maybe the statement win of any team so far this season to go into Atlanta.
If you can make statements at this point of the season.
Right. But I think it's kind of an early shot across the bow of the elite in not just the Eastern Conference, but in the league. So I don't want that lost here. Bradley Wright Phillips was sensational, drew a penalty, scored the other two. I mean, if the season ended today and if I had an MVP vote, he would get my vote. Tied right now for the league lead in goals. But if you look at his goals per minute, he's so far ahead of the other guys that he is. He's tied with Joseph Martinez and Giassi Zardes. I think they each have 8 goals apiece.
Two super headers at the weekend. Great headers.
No, he's been phenomenal, and he's making me look really smart for all the really nice things that I said about him earlier this season. But I say it's a weird win because it was one that was a little bit hard for them to celebrate because Tyler Adams went off with a swollen knee.
A knock to the knee.
Yeah, I don't know if it's been diagnosed as anything. It sounds like it was more precautionary. They're not really sure why it swelled up.
Well, basically, Jesse Marsh was looking for ice for it on the sideline. Yeah. That weird visual.
So he was not included on the U.S. roster for the Bolivia match, but he was expected to be put on for the upcoming Ireland and French matches. We'll have to see now if that is altered. I would have a feeling the Red Bulls would like it to be altered. But there's also rumors about him going to RB Leipzig.
I mean, the way the reports are going, it seems like almost a done deal. He will stay for the season. He won't go this season.
So we'll have to wait and see on that as well. But in addition to that injury, the real injury of note was Kamar Lawrence, who, I'll be honest, I've watched the replay so many times, and I still don't even really know how this serious of an injury occurred.
So a ball skips in front of him. He's almost in the centre-back position, and it's not bouncing high enough that he can put his head on it. So he seems to duck down to head it, and in doing so, he tucks his knees in under himself, and he whips his neck back, and then just passes out and hits the ground. That's basically what happened. So maybe it was some kind of like whiplash concussion, if there's such a thing.
I've never seen a guy give himself whiplash to that sort of extent.
Yeah.
And I think just the odd, unusual nature of it, it freaked a lot of people out.
It definitely did, and he was still for so long. The Red Bulls have reported via social media that he's doing extremely well, and so we're delighted about that.
Of course.
And it was a game where people saying it was chippy, there was a lot of tackles in it. Again, I put it down to the turf surfaces. Those surfaces are so fast, the ball skips away from guys, and they are drawn into lunging.
Which was exactly what happened with Greg Garza.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't malicious at all. He was just trying to make up for a heavy touch.
But it was a bad tackle. I thought the right call was made.
The ball, well, obviously, because you can't, your referee's not able to, you know, be able to sum up someone's intent.
Right.
And his foot rolled across the top of the ball and caught the player. But again, I'm telling you guys, I don't understand why such an expensive stadium can't have grass surface. It's indoors. It just doesn't make sense.
Yep. Let's see. Also, Saturday, 9 o'clock p.m., the Colorado Rapids hosting the suddenly scorching hot Portland Timbers. On April 8th, JJ, Portland suffered that terrible defeat to Orlando City. Since then, they've won 5 straight, including wins over the likes of NYCFC, Seattle Sounders, and LAFC just last weekend. Maybe it's tactical. Maybe some of it is good fortune. I know they've had a few late wins during the course of this stretch. I think 3 of those 5 they scored in the last 10 minutes to go on and win the game. They have switched things up. They use that very aesthetically pleasing Christmas tree formation now, the 4-3-2-1. And Bob Bradley spoke about it for LAFC afterwards, how difficult their midfield has become to try and break down, specifically when they're playing out of that formation. They press high, force turnovers, hit you on the counterattack quickly. They have the skill up front, Lord knows, with Valeri, Addy. So it took a little while, but it feels like maybe Giovanni Savarese has found his way and Portland suddenly looked like the team we thought they were going to be.
Yeah, I watched that game, and it's a great run, but I wouldn't read a whole lot into it in terms of the way. I mean, I saw them getting beaten by Orlando when they shouldn't have been, like 2 late goals. And now they're on the good side of those results, which is kind of what MLS is. It swings and roundabouts. I think he's done a good job. They're a very talented team. But I would look at LAFC's performance when Vea scored that brilliant bending, curling effort, almost identical to the Derby goal that he scored. I thought, okay, right, just try and be composed. And they conceded almost immediately afterwards. There was a lot of space afforded for the winning goal for Portland. So I think a lot of it was Bob Bradley. Bob Bradley played a formation I'm not sure about with three at the back. I don't think it worked.
Let's see, a couple others, which actually we're not really going to touch on because we are, like I said, going to be doing another podcast on Friday when you're in Kiev. But the English League Championship, the playoff final, is Saturday at noon, Aston Villa and Fulham. And, of course, the Champions League final is Saturday at 2:45, Real Madrid and Liverpool. But we'll talk a little bit more about those on the Friday podcast. We bring it down the stretch.
Red card.
Would you like to go first?
Yes. Michael Owen has done an advert, not his first, and here it is.
So, back to the biggest talking point of the day. I started my run here, showed some lovely control there. I was in acres of space, but this guy steams in, bang, right through the back of me. Michael Owen injured again.
Lucky for Michael, Gowing Law are the experts when it comes to injury claims. Injured at work or on the road, text WIN to 60066. That's 60066. Gowing Law. No one knows more about personal injury.
Except me.
On one hand, I want to applaud him for like making fun of his injuries and doing a personal injury ad. On the other hand, I want to say, what are you doing? I mean, you are a rich man, a extremely rich man. At what point do you start becoming the Shaquille O'Neal of endorsements? Shaquille literally, I mean, does Michael Owen do what Shaquille does and literally answer his phone saying, yes, I'll do it?
Yeah, Shaq was doing the general.
Yeah, which is, I mean, pretty incredible as well.
I'll be honest, I got no problem with this. Self-deprecating, all right, get paid. No, you can never have too much money.
I think it's cheesy and funny, and in that way, I guess it's okay. But I've come up with a jingle for, I think he should go into it full time, seeing as he's got such personal injury experience. So I've picked a partner for him. So we're going to have a new jingle. It's going to be Owen and Sturridge.
Injury attorneys.
Is there more?
Well, there's the number, but we can't give the number because it's an actual number for a law firm.
I see.
But if you live in the New York area, you'll be familiar with that jingle.
Let's see. My red card, Sporting Lisbon, but not really the club or the team. But their fan base.
Things are falling apart there.
The team was literally attacked by an upwards of 50 fans, and I put fans in quotes, last week during training. Fans with masks on essentially overran their training facility, attacked players, the manager. Dutch forward Bas Dost had to receive between 8 to 10 stitches for a wound on his head. By the way, he scored 34 goals this season, but whatever. Other notable names like goalkeeper Rui Patricio, William Carvalho, Jorge Jesus, the manager, were also supposedly targeted in this attack. This action came on the heels of Sporting not qualifying for next year's Champions League. Patricio had a goalkeeping error. Sporting wound up losing 2-1 to Maritimo, and their arch rivals Benfica jumped them for that Champions League slot, and these fans lost their minds and have acted in just the worst way possible. They covered their faces with masks when they planned this attack, so I think police are having a difficult time figuring out who was responsible and who is to blame. Sporting were training for this past weekend's Portuguese Cup final where they were taking on Aves, a club that has spent just 3 years in Portugal's top flight in their history. They're up in the top flight right now and actually had a decent season by their standards. It seemed clear that Sporting had no interest in taking part in this game, but they agreed to out of the fans who love the game. They released a statement where all the players signed it, and while their hearts were not in it, they still agreed to take part in the game. They went down 2-0. At that point, many fans in Sporting section turned their back on the club and left. They did pull one back in the 85th minute, but it was too little too late. Bas Dost also missed a sitter in this, which could have helped them. There's so much bad here. The fans obviously attacking them is that's the main story. But at this cup final, even when they were down 2-0, the true fans of this club had a chance to make a statement. And they could have stayed, and they could have applauded their team and shown that even in this difficult time, not qualifying for Champions League, if you feel that that is actually justified in any way of acting this the way that these people have. But the true fans of this club could have made a statement and stayed and supported them. But instead, turning their backs, walking out, this whole thing is really ugly. And now there's a story, I think I saw it at the BBC, where players on this team are looking to take legal action to be removed from their contracts, and it could be in upwards of 200 million euros leaving the club with no money coming back if these players are allowed to leave. I mean, some really high-profile players could suddenly be thrust on the market if they're allowed to come out of this contract. If you're making a list right now of clubs in disarray, prominent clubs in disarray, I think you got to move Sporting right near the top of that list. This is a really, really ugly situation, and I hope that the people who are responsible for that attack are somehow found out and come to justice here, because it was awful.
But it's been a long season of upheaval at the club, and like Bruno Di Carvalho, the owner, is the president, he's not liked by the fans. This has been brewing for some time now, and that's a really ugly end to the season.
Yeah.
Caught Offside's Man of the Match.
Men of the Match. Parma. You'll remember we talked about Parma when they were found to be bankrupt and relegated all the way down to Serie D. Well, Parma has earned promotion to Serie A after 3 years, becoming the first Italian club to earn three successive promotions. Parma's 2-0 win at Spezia on Friday saw it finish second in Serie B after Frosinone conceded a late goal to draw 2-2 at home to Foggia. They finished level on points, but Parma clinched second courtesy of a better head-to-head record. Alessandro Lucarelli was Parma's captain when it was declared bankrupt in 2015. Even though he had to start again from Serie D, he remained with the club. "It can't be true. It's not possible. I can't believe it," Lucarelli said on Italian television, his voice cracking with emotion. "We have done something incredible in these past 3 years, something out of this world. No one could have imagined a finale like this. I'm dying. I can't anymore. It's more than a dream." And here's some audio of the moment that the fans realised that they were going back up to Serie A.
It was really cool because you saw in the video all the players, when they hear the crowd react, they know that it's now official, because they were all just kind of milling about on the pitch. And when they heard the section of their fans react that way, they sprinted into the stands to celebrate with their fans. It was really, really cool.
It's just beautiful. And now people are talking about the perfect symmetry of Buffon finishing his career in Serie A with Parma, who have just returned up. Like, he'd go back to where he came from, I guess, in a way. That might be special. But it's a special achievement nonetheless from Parma, and it's great to see them back up. They were pretty special in the 90s. Some of the players they had, Andrew. Zola, Hernan Crespo. Great to have them back.
Yep. Let's see. My man of the match is also man of the match, and it's also from the same country as the one that you just stated.
Oh.
And from the league that they are now entering. And it's Inter Milan, who are back in the Champions League after a dramatic final day, having managed to draw with Crotone, who, by the way, were just relegated this past weekend. Lazio kept Inter in the hunt for the final Champions League spot in Serie A. The Milan side needed to beat Lazio on the final day, and they did so despite trailing twice in the match. Mauro Icardi converted a penalty in the 78th minute, and then Matias Vecino did this.
Brozovic outswinger. It's not a goal! It's Inter in front! Matias Vecino, with 10 minutes to play, has put Inter into the Champions League! Lazio 2, Inter 3!
They end the year tied on points with Lazio, but the tiebreaker goes Inter's way thanks to their head-to-head record. They're now back in the Champions League for the first time since the 2011-12 season. I can't believe Inter have been out that long. But it is... it's a nice story. It's nice to have them back. Classic side like that.
So, happy memories for you last time they were in the Champions League as well.
One of my favorite Spurs games I've ever seen. Yeah. The 3-1 at the Lane that night. But yeah, very, very dramatic stuff for Inter. And pretty fun game. It was being sport on the call there as well. So good for Inter. Good to have them back. Before we get out, of course, we should mention some of the rumors that are circulating in terms of managerial appointments. It looks like Unai Emery, out of almost nowhere, is going to be the next manager for Arsenal.
It was nailed on Arteta, and then there was the last minute change of heart, according to the journalists we respect in England, which is very, very interesting. Slightly strange.
Yeah.
Lots of, I guess, argument over whether this is a good or a bad thing.
I mean, look, I've seen a lot of people, again, everyone's instinct is to just rip, don't like it, hate it. I don't know. He did a good job at Sevilla. He went to PSG. They lost in the Champions League to Barcelona. I know it was in horrifying fashion, but it's Barcelona that they lost to. Then the next year, they get this incredible squad with Neymar and Mbappe, and they keep Cavani.
But that's not a normal managerial role.
No. And he's trying to manage people because Cavani and Neymar, there's clearly an issue there, and it seems like a rift had formed. And they lose to Real Madrid, who are going to be playing for the Champions League final this coming weekend against Liverpool. So if every manager who loses to clubs like Barcelona and Real Madrid are labeled as bad managers, is that really fair? I know there's more to it than that. I'm simplifying it. Look, they dominated the league this year the way they were supposed to, and they went out of the Champions League to Real Madrid. Against Bayern Munich, they played well in the group stage. So am I ready to call this a bad appointment off of what his previous work experience has been? No, not necessarily. I don't know that it's great. I don't think we know yet. But you know,
we don't know yet. So the other, yeah. I mean, the alternative was handing a former player his very first senior coaching head. You know, I mean, why was that obviously the one to go for? Yeah. Why was that obviously the good one? I don't know.
Yeah. And look, people may tell you that neither of those should have been the choice.
Right.
But I'm not ready to just slag this off and say that it's a bad appointment, a bad hire by Arsenal.
Pellegrini in at West Ham. Thoughts?
I would say good hire for them. I mean, he's not going to win a title with West Ham, but he does have championship pedigree that he's bringing with them to that club. So I would think the fans would probably like to have that.
The fans did obviously reacted on Twitter to a little, you know what it's like. Clubs are media organizations as much as anybody else. So West Ham did a 10 things you didn't know about Pellegrini. And one of them was that he was a... he was involved in construction, or he was a construction major. And some wag tweeted then, oh, well, maybe he'll find a way to construct the seats closer to the pitch.
That's kind of clever. Good for that guy. I thought it was a good hire. When I saw it, I thought, yeah, okay. Look, I don't even know that Moyes should have left, and I'm very curious to see where he winds up going. But yeah, Pellegrini, if you're West Ham, I think you could have done worse, so... I think most fans should be generally pleased with that. So there you go. Big podcast. Oh, my God. I'm terrified looking at how long it was. We've got some World Cup group previews coming out, so keep your eyes open for that over the next couple days. And, of course, a Champions League final preview with JJ coming to you from Kiev. Incredible. I can't believe he's actually doing it by himself. This is shocking. Hey.
Me and at least 30,000 of my friends.
Yeah, that's how it works. Good stuff, my friend. This was fun.
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.